The episode you're about to listen to is from an unreleased episode of an earlier incarnation of the Away Team. These were Adam and I's first impressions of Star Trek Discovery back in 2017. There may be issues with events and future events within the show, but this hasn't been heard since it was deleted from the internet back in 2018. Sit back and enjoy.
Captain Archer of the battlecruiser Enterprise.
This is Captain James Kirk of the USS Enterprise.
This is Jean-Luc Picard, captain of the Enterprise.
This is Captain Sisko of the USS Defiant.
My name is Catherine Janeway.
Prune juice, chilled.
Welcome to the Away Team, a Star Trek podcast. A podcast that is designed to comment and critique each episode of Star Trek in canonical order, with a bit of a twist.
What that booty doodle?
Welcome, welcome, welcome to another exciting, fun-filled, adventurous, risque Away Team minisode for Star Trek Discovery, Episode 5, Choose Your Pain.
A much better title than last episode.
Yes, because it's three words. Next week's is one word. So,
Honestly, I know it's not a direct quote, but it reminds me of Mortal Kombat. It's something you could see being said in a Mortal Kombat game.
Right.
Choose your pain.
Oh shit.
Mortal Kombat. You expected Christopher Lambert to pop out behind Captain Lorca and go, "I have nothing more to teach you."
Fatality.
Like, oh shit. Master Raiden.
Alright, welcome everybody. I'm Stephen Vargas.
I'm Adam Riley.
And so this week's episode of Star Trek Discovery, a hell of a lot better than last week's episode. We got some action, but we also got some, I guess you can say, moral, how would I put it? More of a moral justice in this instance.
We also got a classic Star Trek character.
Yes.
Which was done very well, by
the way. Via The Office. So the brief description is, while on a mission, Lorca is captured by the Klingons and unexpectedly finds himself in the company of a prisoner of war, Starfleet Lieutenant Ash Tyler, and notorious criminal Harry Mudd. I dug this episode. This episode had a better flow. I actually thought Lorca was going to be held a little bit longer than just a single episode.
Yeah.
But still, I thought well-paced. One of the things is that I kind of thought that if he was going to talk to Starfleet, that the ship itself would have taken him there. Especially in wartime.
Yeah, I mean...
There were some little issues that I'm like, well, why, if you're in the middle of war and he's a captain of a top secret ship, why are you taking him via shuttlecraft? You know, it just seemed a little weird, but you know.
All I know, okay, is this episode felt like the most Star Trek episode out of all of them so far.
Right.
Because it was the whole beating impossible odds, you know, and that kind of shit. And I dug it. Like, it was just so, it was fun to watch. I'm sympathetic with Lorca's fucking light sensitivity.
Right.
While I don't have it to his severity, I am light sensitive. And every time a light shines in his face and he curls away, I'm like, I know those feels, bro.
I got you, bro.
That shit hurts. Yeah. Mud was fucking fantastic. I hope he comes back.
Well, I from what I've heard, he's supposed to be in at least two episodes. But at least that's from what I heard. I don't know if that changed at all. But yeah, I did like I did like Mudd, because if you were, if you're fans of the 60s series, the original series, Harry Mudd was more of a buffoon, kind of, you know, a traditional kind of Ferengi in a little aspects, you know.
Yeah,
Mudd's women, and then
wheeling a deal, yeah, and stuff like
and
that.
Always looking to serve his best interest. My brother and I, we when we started watching him, and he introduced himself as Hardcore Fenton Mudd, and it's funny because most people, you know, Harry Mudd, and but you know, if you're a true fan, you know his full name. And then when I told my brother, I go, "Oh, guess who's coming on next week's episode?" He goes, "Who?" I go, "Hardcore Fenton Mudd," and then he goes, "Oh shit! No, really? Oh, really? Oh, like, you know, you know that full name." I thought he did extremely well when he gave his whole reason for being on that Klingon ship. My brother and I both went, "Bullshit!" You know, yeah. We call bullshit. We're like, "Oh, he's still using Stella as his line." I dug it. He's very much very similar.
See, I know the character, but I don't have as much experience with the original series as I started watching Star Trek with Next Generation, because I'm an 80s kid.
Right.
But I do know of him. And so the whole Stella thing, I don't understand. But you can tell that he's bullshit. Like, yeah. He's just making excuses for shit. But he is, as funny as he is and as jovial as he looks, he's the worst. He's the most dangerous kind of enemy.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's so calm and he's relaxed and he's making jokes and stuff, but he is completely for himself.
Oh, yeah.
Like when he, with no qualms, pointed at the other Starfleet officer that was there. Because the Klingons were coming into the cell.
And you and had to choose.
They said, choose your pain. So basically, choose who's going to get hurt.
Right.
And then he was instantly pointed at the Starfleet. I think it was an ensign. Yeah. And they beat his ass, yeah. Motherfucker. Like, I think they killed that dude because you never saw him again.
Right.
And then they just leave. You know, it's just kind of your daily beating. And then he tries to justify it, but his justification is 100% accurate because it doesn't have any empathy in it at all. It's right. I'm a survivor. I'm worried about myself.
Right. Exactly.
You know, and it was crazy.
Yeah, and I like when Lorca comes walking back in and he's about to beat the shit out of Harry, and Harry goes, use your words.
Right. That was fucking great.
One of the big things that I thought was funny was when Saru became captain of Discovery and was in charge of getting Lorca back from that Klingon colony. You know, he was trying to figure out how to be a captain, basically, because and the truth finally comes out between Soro and Michael, or Michelle or whatever you want to call this person.
Just Michael.
Michael.
You know what? I like the character enough now that I'm just going to call her Michael. Like, it's fine.
But when, you know, he finally reveals as to, you know, why he hates her, you know, it's because he was jealous of her. And we kind of figure that out, you know. Yeah. Early on, but when he goes and brings up the list of best captains,
bruh,
and three of those captains are from the Enterprise, I'm like,
my dog, fucking Jonathan Archer.
It is Jonathan Archer, Captain Christopher Pike, and Captain Robert April, all
yep.
Three captains of the Enterprise at some
and can
point.
Can I take a second to say, I was on a forum, they were talking about Star Trek Discovery, and someone was like, I didn't see Kirk on there. I'm like, can you pay attention to where we are in the fucking timeline? Jesus.
I know.
I actually got angry. Like, I was like, fuck you, man, to pay attention.
John goes, I didn't see Picard's name on there. And then right. I looked at him and then he goes,
where's Janeway?
I looked at him and I go, it's before his time. He goes, it doesn't matter. And I'm like, you know what? You're right.
You know what? He is he's right. Right.
It don't fucking matter. It should be on there regardless.
No, but I dug this bit too because I always forget his name, but the first officer that was acting captain,
Saru.
Saru. It's already been made known that he is of a race that is basically bred to be prey.
Right.
Like he's not supposed to be a full of courage kind of dude.
Right.
And he kind of does. He asks the computer to cross reference each captain and give them what traits do they share. You know, and one of them is courage and self-sacrifice. You know, this stuff that any captain, Star Trek or not, right, would have. And you could see that he was a little like crap, you know,
because even his former captain was listed on that list.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, I missed that.
Yeah, she was on there, too. I was like going, oh, shit. But when I saw Captain Robert April first, I was like, oh, shit. I go,
yeah.
And then Jonathan Archer, I was like, damn fucking right. Jonathan Archer better be on that
fucking
list.
Damn right he's on it.
Yeah, and then I saw Christopher Pike. I'm like, oh shit! I go, cool. At least we got that. One thing that we kind of talked about on the last episode is the health of the animal. And
right,
this time, Michael took it further about that they're torturing this creature basically for their spore drive. So she basically pulls in the doctor, who we saw like a glimpse of in last week's episode, but this week he got a lot more play, and I dug him.
I like him too.
I liked him a lot, and you know, they're saying that they wanted to do tests on it because they believe they're torturing it, but then Saru was in charge of trying to rescue the captain, so he was all, no, put it back online. So then when they did the jump to Klingon space, I had called it right there. I was like, okay, they're in Klingon space. They're not going to be able to get back. I was like, that's what's going to happen. And then, of course, it does. But if you actually, Stamets was kind of like, not quite sure what they're, you know, about that, you know, about what they're doing and stuff like that, you know, thinking that they're maybe, you know, he's like, hey, you're the one that started this whole thing, you know. And then once they did the jump, him and Tilly started watching the monster go into extreme pain when they did the jump. And you could see, especially in Stamets' line, where he just wasn't looking at the monster. He's looking down at the creature. He's looking down at the console. And you saw that it was bugging him.
You know,
what was going on. And then when they needed to get...
Well, because they're essentially torturing for their own gain.
Right. And I knew that of anything, he wasn't going to take that because he was a scientist. He's not, you know, a fucking military man.
Right.
And so when they eventually made the decision, you know, where they went and I guess you would call it like comatose or something like that. And then when I knew they were going to have to find another way, but I didn't realize that he was going to basically do it himself, you know?
Yeah. It was pretty crazy how they explained it too. So basically there was there was another conversation with the doctor and Stamets. And they're both talking to Saru, and Saru's like, "Well, bring it back so we can go." And the doctor's like, "It's going to kill it." And being a doctor, he's like, "I'm not going to have any part in this."
Right.
And the doctor can do that because the doctor outranks in certain areas. So then he turned a science student. He's like, "Are you going to follow my orders?" And he said, "Yes." And then you see that everyone's kind of, I had the same look everyone else had on the screen. Like, the fuck you mean? Yes. But there was something that Michael had said earlier that they were trying this episode to graph the DNA of the animal onto a compatible animal that is sentient. They wanted one that was sentient enough to realize that they're doing something for the greater good.
Right.
Because this animal doesn't understand.
Yeah.
He just knows he's being hurt. So they needed something that was shared DNA with mushrooms, which, and this is true, humans do.
Yeah.
But no, everyone, human testing is illegal. And Michael's like, I know that. That's why we're trying to figure something out. This is a few conversations going on. Really great conversations, by the way. Acting, I can tell the acting is stepping up a little bit too.
Yeah.
A little less hollow. You know what I mean? The chemistry's getting there. And I'll let you pick up from there because I'm not going to explain the whole fucking episode.
Yeah. So basically, they managed to jump out, but Stamets had injected himself,
right?
With that DNA.
Oh yeah, because Saru says, "Are we ready to jump?" And he says, "Yeah, we can jump."
And then when he goes, "Great job, Stamets," and then all of a sudden and there's no response. So he gets down there and you see Stamets lying in the chamber with fucking puncture holes in the side.
Some serious puncture holes.
And then when he comes to, he's just he starts laughing. You're like, okay, he's delirious now.
Yeah.
How did you feel about the F-bombs?
It didn't bother me. I mean, I will admit when it happened, I was like, huh?
Yeah.
And I rewound it because it's still Star Trek.
Yeah.
You know, so you're kind of like, what? But I don't think it was done in a dumb way. I could see them saying that at that time, you know, because it was the quirky girl that said, this is fucking cool.
Yeah.
And then she goes, oh, sorry. And it almost addresses how we would feel about it. Cause she quickly was like, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And then the science dude was like, no, it is fucking cool.
Yeah.
You know, and then it almost validated it in that phrase. Now, if as long as they don't overdo it.
Yeah. I mean, to me, it was kind of like, I'm not sure how I felt about it because there is just, I mean, you know, and this is where we get into our little nerdum there. It's just that it is Star Trek, and I understand they're trying to make it relate a little bit more to us, but that's what we have the Orville for.
I think the big problem is, too, is they don't make shows for all audiences anymore. It's either for adults or not.
Yeah.
You know, and this is clearly for adults. You know, so.
Yeah. But
and they could also get away with it, too, because they're not on
They're not on
broadcast TV.
Yeah, on broadcast TV. So a couple of other little things. The escape from the Klingon prison. And I'm not saying that this was the fault of the writers, but it's just because I have this really weird feeling about Ash Tyler. And I'm just thinking the escape seemed a little too convenient and a little too off the mark where they just like couldn't shoot him. I mean, they're not stormtroopers, you know, so, you know, Klingons can hit their target. It just.
Yeah, they are. If there's one thing Klingons know how to do, it's fight.
Yes. And so I just found it to be a little too convenient that they made it out. And I'm thinking that there is another podcast that we listen to called Priority One. And the girl on there had a theory that the Klingon from the last episode was said that there's a way for him to get everybody back, but he would have to lose everything. And her theory was that he would manipulate himself to become human and infiltrate Starfleet.
And that would start getting into
why Klingons look
that certain way. And that was addressed in an Enterprise episode, which is a really good episode.
Right.
I did want to touch on too, it was kind of sad at the end, but the ensign, so there was an ensign that died in the beginning, but there was another ensign too. And he teamed up with Lorca. And he was dope. Like right away, he was like, this is my captain for now. Like,
right.
and you know, typical Starfleet, but it was dope to see that. Cause Mudd was already annoying me.
Yeah.
Cause he wasn't going to help anyone.
Right.
You know, so it was whatever.
And they lock him in there.
Yeah. They lock his ass in there. And then he gives that classic line that all villains give. You won't see the last of me. You know.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is true because we see him two more times in the original series.
Exactly. So he, you come to find out that he says in a conversation in the prison or in the cell that the captain of the vessel, who is a female Klingon, has taken a liking to him.
Right.
Because Lorca made notice. Lorca looks suspicious because he knows Mudd's been doing the choose your pain and pointing at other people.
Right.
And he was like, you look oddly missing of bruises.
Yeah.
You know, and stuff like that. And he says, well, she's taking a liking. You're kind of like, oh, shit, like they're hooking up. But then at the end when they're leaving, he stayed behind. I think he hurt himself, didn't he?
Yeah.
He stayed in the hallway. And then the chick comes out and she says, you think you could leave me after all we've been through? And then he attacks her, but he attacks her like a rape victim.
Yeah.
And it kind of gave it like at first I was like, oh shit, they hooking up, motherfucker.
Right.
And then I saw that scene, I was like, fuck. You know, because then you think about it, a Klingon female is stronger than a human male.
Oh yeah.
You know, so she was taken advantage of. And I was like, that's fucked up. And then also I'm sitting there like, I thought they were supposed to be fucking Klingon first bullshit. And she's hopping on that human dick. You know, so it's whatever.
Hey,
but,
well, it happened in the South, you know.
Yeah. That exit was a little convenient, mm-hmm. I will admit. But it was dope as fuck. I don't give a shit. I was having so much fun watching them fucking escape that shit.
Dude. I mean, the blasters, and you see them like completely incinerate those things, and he conveniently shoots the side where it hits her in the face. Or burns
her so
face.
She's obviously going to come back.
Right. So it was those little things where I'm like, it just seems a little too easy. But the last bit that I wanted to touch on was, did we just get a glimpse of the Mirrorverse?
What are you talking about, Mirrorverse?
At the end of the episode, Stamets is looking in the mirror, and then he smiles, and he turns and walks away, but his reflection stays.
Oh, yeah, I did see that. That was creepy as fuck, by the way.
Yeah, which there is supposed to be a Mirror Universe episode in this season. So I was wondering, did they somehow open a Mirror Universe by the jump? Or did he somehow do it? Because remember, he said he saw different worlds and planets and universes and stuff. So did we just get it? Did he get a glimpse of the Mirrorverse?
That's crazy.
So
I do want to address real quick. There was a scene at the end of the show where we discover or we find out that how do you say his name?
Stamets.
And the doctor, who I can't remember his fucking, are a couple. Like they share a quarters. And they're brushing their teeth together and there's a conversation's being had of because Stamets basically put himself in a very dangerous situation to save the ship.
Right.
And the doctor's like, you know, I just don't want to lose you, like that kind of thing, you know. And I'm watching this and I'm not even really connecting the fact that I'm watching two gay men because I don't care. But then also I'm just the scene was done so well. And I think it was probably the best representation of a gay or lesbian couple on a television series that I've ever seen because it was just a normal couple.
Yeah.
They weren't hamming it up. They weren't being like, look, we're gay constantly.
Right.
They were just a normal couple having a conversation. I think they looked at each other a couple times, like with that loving look, like, I just don't want you to be hurt kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was really touching. I thought it was a nice little scene. And I hope we see more of that. You know, yeah. I hope we see it where it's not in your face. Now, full disclosure, my wife has gotten into watching Will and Grace, which is the exact opposite of what I'm saying.
Right.
Where the entire show was a gay joke, you know, and that kind of 90s sitcom way of addressing homosexuality is really fucking dated. And I like how it's just a normal thing. It wasn't a big deal. I don't know. I just dug it. I applaud the writers for really and the actors just for doing that correctly and not doing it to like, oh, this will get us some fucking attention. Nah, fuck that. You know what I mean? Right. Like it was dope.
Yeah, no, I agree. It was very subtle until like the almost near the end of the scene when it mentioned, you know, when they just basically mentioned that, you know,
that look in the mirror was creepy. And I was on my way out the door because I watched it in the morning before I went to work. And I closed it and then I'm walking away and I'm like, wait a minute, did he walk away from the mirror?
Yeah.
And then he was in front of it, but I wasn't there, so I couldn't rewind it. So I was kind of thinking on that shit for like a good hour. Like I was like, wait a minute, what the fuck is happening? And then I think I just rationalized it as he must have turned around and I didn't see it or something. Because I was getting my stuff together as I was walking out. But that mirror, that's why you said mirror universe. I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah.
But that's a dope idea.
Yeah. Because they're
he lacked a goatee. I'm just saying.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, everybody better have a goatee. Michael better have a fucking goatee in that mirror universe. That's all I'm saying. But yeah, I definitely really like this episode. Should probably start wrapping it up, but really like this episode. Thought it was a strong comeback after kind of the meh last one. And but it more mirrored the episode that we saw before.
Right.
So, you know, so.
I do want to say one last thing is and just to give respect where respect is due, standout characters for me right now, Saru, very interesting. Right. I want to see where he's going to progress. Lorca is I like him more, but I still don't know if I should. And I do like Michael a lot.
You don't know if you have to take a shower after seeing that you like Lorca.
I do like Michael a lot.
My only issue with Michael is if Michael continues using the manipulation like she loses, because that's when I find I like her the least is when she's using manipulation to get something that she wants, deception, you know. That's when I like her the least. When I like her being like, you know, look, this is an issue. We need to discuss this. We need to make this happen. That's when I like her the better.
And I think they leaned more on that side this episode too.
Yeah, because I agree.
The deception shows it's impressive because it's pretty slick deception, but it's very human. And I know she's human, right. But there's two things that are wrong with it. One, if she grew up on Vulcan, she would have never been experienced to that form of deception.
Right.
And then two, yes, I know humans can be deceptive naturally, but not at that level.
Right.
Like, she's being pretty advanced at deception, you know? So I did like her this episode because I felt it was a little bit more, and they let the animal go into space. It was, why did it remind me of Superman, bro? Like, they lifted him into space and she dumped some of the,
wait, didn't
the spores
you, didn't you
on
hear
him.
The,
dude, I heard that shit. Like, they dumped the spores and he gets in space and it's beautiful looking. And then he kind of, because he shrunk down, because he went into a stasis by dropping his hydration levels to below 1%.
Right.
And then he expanded, and then he just kind of swelled up, and lightning came out, and he was gone, dude. I was like, that's motherfucking Superman.
Oh, man.
Thanks for tuning in. If you like what I'm doing, you have two ways to help out. One, you can make a one-time donation to make this show self-sustaining through either PayPal, Cash App, or Venmo. Check the show notes for details and links. Or two, you can share us on social media or review us on Apple Podcasts. That will make the algorithm gods, you know, promote our show to an unsuspecting public. You can also stalk me on Facebook, facebook.com/thelazygeeks4. Instagram, YouTube, Threads, or TikTok under @TheLazyGeeks, all one word. If you're old school, you can email us at thelazygeeksnetwork@gmail.com. Want to read some news, blogs, or just some of my random musings? Check out the blog at thelazygeeks4.wordpress.com. So that's it for me this week. So until next time, I'm Stephen Vargas. One to beam up.